back-to-back music. With the best talk. 95.9 FM. Calabar. From the Canaan city of Calabar. To your best music, best talk radio. This is The Dialogue. With Agba Jalingo. Jalingo. On Hit 95.9 FM. Calabar. Calabar.
Good evening and welcome to episode 365 of The Dialogue with Agba Jalingo, coming to you live from the studios of the premier audio broadcasting outfit in that ancient city of Calabar, the Hit 95.9 FM, where you get the best music and the best talk. And of course, on the best talk this evening, we are discussing sexual violence and how best to take care of survivors. My name is Jonathan Abang, and I'm moderating this evening's dialogue in the absence of citizen Agba Jalingo himself. Yes, yesterday was World Humanitarian Day, and we try to be very humane in all that we do. I know some people will definitely feel this conversation will trigger some memories, but we do urge you, if that is the case, to take a step back from your stereo sets, and our mental health is really important. The policy is do no harm. Now, what is sexual violence? This refers to any unwanted sexual contact or activity that is forced or coerced by another person or group of persons. It can happen to anyone regardless of their age, gender, race or background. Furthermore, the act can also happen anywhere, including places that are often thought to be safe spaces, such as schools, medical facilities, among others. With the National Human Rights Commission receiving over 11,200 rape petitions in the year 2020 alone. In addition, survivors of these horrible acts, which is criminalized globally, usually suffer physical, emotional, and psychological harm. Their relationships, work, and well-being are typically impacted as well. But what is often the first course of action by survivors? Is that the best? How has society treated survivors over the years? Has that been the best approach? What support mechanisms are in place? Are they sustainable? In recent times, there has been a surge in outcry for stiffer penalties for perpetrators amidst an onslaught of survivors speaking out, which has led to backlash, threats, and shame campaigns. How can survivors pull through this? Are there penalties for stigmatization? If they are they being enforced? These and more form the basis of this evening's The Dialogue with Agba Jalingo, with the topic, threats, trauma and therapy, supporting victims of sexual violence. Threats, trauma and therapy, supporting victims of sexual violence. Joining me in the studio, we have Associate Professor Hannah Etha, who will be a professor. Well, I don't know why they have associates to professorship anyway, but because associate of professor is one and the same thing to me. She is the former national coordinator of SOFA Don't Do. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.
And we also have a friend of the house, James Ibo Esquire, the principal counsel at Basic Rights Council Initiative. Good evening, Esquire, and welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, let me start with you, Prof. We have seen a situation where the culture of silence has permeated through the rank and file of survivors. Is this the best thing for them to do?
Not at all. We, like you said, yes, it's very common to run away, shy away, especially feel guilty that you were victimized. And it's not the best thing. If a child or a person has been assaulted sexually, the best thing to do is to seek for help. Reach out. Say something. Please, don't keep it to yourself. because you're going to live in a world of perpetual regret. At some point, they even blame themselves for what happened, whereas it's not any of their fault that they were assaulted. So the culture of silence is very detrimental in this situation and should be discouraged.
We've seen people carry out threats. They have even harmed some, gone ahead to even shame them in public. How does this impact on the survivor?
Yes, those things are expected because the perpetrator will and his enablers will always want to cover up. And they may even scream more than you that was violated. But in the face of all this, the victim or the survivor should not be cowed into silence. They are purposely doing all that to scare you, to make you keep quiet so you don't expose them. But the victim shouldn't be cowed. You need to speak up and speak out, and on time too, so the matter can be taken out of your hands and out of your mind.
Taken out of your hands and out of your mind. We've seen some of these cases get to legal practitioners who petition, and we've seen some convictions. Barrister James Ibo, we have one at the matter which is even topical, and there have been allegations and counter-allegations and claims of threats, as it were. I know you're defending some of these students. How is this even legal? Is there any law basically kicking against threats to survivors, or even carrying out body shaming online and what have you, slut shaming, as it were?
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. And the case we are currently handling is that involving Professor Cyril Hossein Diffon. My clients had actually played recordings and shared footages of threats from lecturers in the Faculty of Law, students in the Faculty of Law, and some other persons. It's actually very frustrating that people who should have covered their heads in shame are leaving no stone unturned to frustrate investigations. Sadly, the police have not even contacted the survivors or the victims. You know, the culture of where the police sits down, waits for you to walk into the station to report a crime is very frustrating. It's very unfortunate. The duty of the police is to detect crime and prevent crime.
We saw the first PR Raven tweeted something like that, where a lady held on to a guy and was like, "Come and suck my breast, come and suck my breast." And the first PR said the man probably enjoyed it, that's why he has not reported it. Is there any legal implication to that?
That's what I'm saying. The police shouldn't wait until you walk to a police station to report a crime. As soon as they detect a crime, they should respond. That is the law. You know, so I've heard them many times talk about nobody has come to report. And whether the person reported or not, in the course of investigation, they have to take steps to protect their witnesses. So I want to use this opportunity to demand for the protection of the students of the Faculty of the Lausanne President and all those who participated in the protest, and all those who had actually tweeted or made posts supporting or making claims that Professor Cyril Diffon had also sexually harassed or assaulted them or exploited them. You see, the police has to do better by, leaving the confines or the comforts of their police stations to protect the Nigerian citizen. The reason why they are established, the reason why they are paid. I know they have their challenges, they are poorly funded, they are poorly trained too, but at least they should be seen to be doing something. I am very disappointed since the 14th of this month when the news broke out. The police have not contacted any of the victims or survivors in this case. They've actually made no step to respond to the outcry that these children need justice.
Good. talking about outcry there and the fact that we are urging people to speak out, right? Is there any legal framework that survivors can use to protect, you know, their privacy or confidentiality when sharing their experiences?
Of course. Even though it's not adequate, the law has made provisions for survivor confidentiality during proceedings. That is not even a concern. What is my greatest frustration now is their physical safety. You know, their physical safety. I had expected by now that the police should have invited the suspects and their accomplices. I had expected, but none of that has happened. Yes, I must commend the university for taking the first bold step by suspending the professor. They also promised to set up a panel to investigate the allegations. We are not aware if that panel has been set up. We are still waiting. I'm also aware that the Nigerian Bar Association has also set up a panel to investigate. The panel too, they've actually made contact and we are expecting to see them. So what is our concern now is the threat. He's reaching out to survivors. Himself and his accomplices are reaching out to survivors and threatening them. They are scared of their lives. They are scared of their personal safety. Their parents are concerned. And the police must take steps to keep them safe.
Professor Oita, now, there are several legal options Mr. James Ibo has mentioned here. Now I think he's become professor by association.
Yes. By sitting beside my erudite
Adeshefo. So, now, with all of that, is there a way, or what actually should people who are around survivors do to ensure that you know, they keep them comfortable, they keep them sane, they keep them from breaking down?
Yes, just as it should be expected, any survivor of sexual violence, in this case I want to talk about like the students, because when we say sexual violence is really broad. I mean, husbands assault their wives, by the hour. But let's talk about the student that is a survivor, a victim. First of all, they need reassurance. Because this student walks out of that place, it's like their world is shattered. It's like their dream of their self-worth has been tampered with, has been damaged. They feel used. Of course, they've been used, they've been abused. So they walk out of there feeling like, if it was okay, I would have just ended my life. You must give them that reassurance first. That's why the person they speak to first also really matters. If you're the friend of a survivor and she comes to you, please don't say, hey, don't tell anybody. Shh, keep quiet. Oh. No. Give them a warm hug. Tell them we are going to go through this together. What happened? And she tells you, believe everything the survivor tells you, especially at that traumatized state. And try your best to calm them down. Because they are coming in a way, even several months, several years after the event itself, some victims are still traumatized. They need to be reassured. They need to be believed. They need to be, in fact, banish any form of judgment against them. Try to let them know that they are not the reason why that thing happened. It's not because of what you wore. It's not because of what you said. It's not because of what you did. Somebody's mind is just twisted, and unfortunately, you became a victim to his twisted mind, his psychological problem. So don't blame yourself. The best thing to do is to encourage them to speak out. Let us look for help. Let us try to walk through this to the point that we can get justice for you. Because like we said earlier, they tend to run away, keep to themselves, some attempts to commit suicide and all that. No, don't take it out on yourself. You can be helped. There's help, but you must do the first right things. Don't don't also go and maybe plan with a group of people to beat up the man or take the laws into your hands, because we've also seen cases where that happens.
Yeah.
No, so don't do that. It's also wrong. You can't use one wrong to correct another wrong, but you can talk to somebody, a counselor. Some our universities have counseling units, and you know they are under professional obligation to keep your story. So they are not.
But
going
will you
to
say realistically, the society has actually ensured that even works effectively?
There's really, in fact, it's just recently I knew that my school has a school counselor. I'm not saying a department of counseling, a school counselor that is employed for students. So the student affairs unit should have a counselor that students can work up to. Then the schools can set up maybe gender-based departments or units and train the staff on how to handle these situations as soon as it comes up. And then the onus lies on we, the people listening to the survivors, to see that legal action is taken. Because it won't be enough just to come to you and cry, and then you try to encourage, give succor, and then nothing is done. No, legal action must be instituted against whoever perpetrated that harm.
Let me come back to you, Barrister Ibo. Is there any penalty for stigmatization?
Yeah, it depends on the kind of stigma. It all depends on the circumstances. So maybe if you clearly paint a picture, I'll be able to answer it appropriately. But lest I forget. You see, the system, we have actually failed our children and our undergraduates, because most times when people get into school, especially these days, many of them are 15, 16, 17 years, they are children. So what is, how are orientation classes organized? As they are being onboarded into the university environment, what are we telling them? Most times we organize prayers and fasting during orientation this day. We don't give them information about the school counselor, like you just pointed out. I didn't know a counselor ever existed in the school system. We don't tell them what to do when they are sexually assaulted or when they are victimized. We don't tell them. These are things that are supposed to be done during orientation. Usually orientation should be compulsory, not prayer. You don't pray in an orientation ground. I think we also need to design policies to tackle this. Yeah. We don't need to wait for the national law, like the one they sponsor. The university has to design policies on how lecturers should conduct themselves on campus, how students should conduct themselves on campus. What do you do? Why should lecturers be having sexual relationship with their students? Because there exists a fiduciary relationship between lecturers and students. So a lecturer should not be having any sexual relationship with any student. So these are policies that should be designed. The only policy that is popular and very unfortunate is the policy of dressing. We are in a university. University is supposed, you are supposed to be dressed the way you feel comfortable with. And research has shown that dressing doesn't contribute to rape. So that is the only thing. You see, lecturers sometimes, in order to excuse their very repulsive behavior, they say the students are dressing anyhow. It's very unfortunate.
And to add to that, Jonathan, yes, we keep hearing this story, tell the girls to dress properly. How about the girls that are religiously covered up because of their religious beliefs and they are still assaulted? Muslim girls get assaulted, they are on the hijab, fully covered. You see only their facial features. You have girls that are properly dressed, still being victimized. If not sexually assaulted, a lecturer will purposely fail you because you refuse to have sexual relationships with him. What has dressing got to do with that on the campuses? That is also not an excuse to walk naked to school. I tell my colleagues when they bring up this dressing issue, you are the lecturer, you are the adult. A girl walks into your office improperly dressed, tell her, young lady, go out and dress properly. I'm going to call his name, Professor, then he was Dr. Udo, Paul Udo. He does it every time, in my year two. You walk into his office improperly dressed, he will ask you, are you a science student? I don't think so. Walk out and go and dress properly and come back. Those were the kind of lecturers I had when I was an undergraduate. And that can also, I mean, it should continue. If the girl dresses improperly and walks into your office, ask her to go out and dress properly before she comes back. Don't say because she came in with her breast hanging out, that was why you sucked the breast. That's irresponsible, please.
I wonder when they go to spa to shop, whether they take those items that are attracted to them.
Actually not. Because we have just two minutes left on the program. What are the ethical, or how can professionals who we're talking about counselors now and the rest, or people who are the first line of defense for these survivors when these things happen, how can they report ethically and in a manner that will not impact on the case?
You can rephrase your question so that I can.
How can professionals who render services to survivors report to legal authorities ethically and also in a manner that will ensure it does not impact negatively on the case and on the survivor?
It's simple. Maybe during counseling, I realized that a survivor is in danger. Of course, if the danger is in criminal respect, depending on the issue, sometimes it's difficult to answer questions when they are hypothetical. Depending on how you judge the situation, you'll be able to provide, make the appropriate report. Like in this case, what the students did, because they've actually been writing petitions to the university authority and they feel frustrated that the university hadn't done anything. They decided to hit the streets. Mm-hmm. They decided to protest. And it was a protest that compelled the university to take steps to protecting them. So I want to use this opportunity to commend them, because these allegations around Professor Siri Ndifon has been on for over two decades.
Yes.
You know, and students never had the nerves and the guts to shout out the way this particular set of law students did. So I must commend them for their courage. And civil society organizations across the globe have pledged their commitment to ensure that justice is served. You know, the university has to set up a panel to investigate all cases of sexual assault. Sex for grades is a common phenomenon in the Nigerian universities. It's everywhere. So we must declare a state of emergency about the complaints of our young women complaining that lecturers are trading sex for grades. I'm not surprised. The reason why we don't have free and fair elections, I cannot see the caliber of lecturers we've actually produced over time.
But prophecy anyway.
Not all the professors. Okay.
Prof, we have 30 seconds left. What about the boys? I mean, we'll be talking about the young ladies. What about the boys?
Anybody that is sexually assaulted, male or female, please speak up. Speak out. Don't keep it to yourself. I know boys that are in conversation with them, they have said, that they were assaulted by people in authority they looked up to. A teacher in your boarding school will assault you sexually. Please, don't hide it. Don't keep it to yourself. Report. And again, as a last statement, I want to say, our schools, it's high time, like Barrister said, we institutionalize these policies. Committees should be set up to draft sexual harassment policies that should be invoked, and the policy should be made known to students and staff. Like you said, matriculation events, orientations, departmental orientation, those are good fora to talk to students and let them know that you have legal rights. If anybody, even if a fellow student assaults you, this is what you can do. Don't keep it. Don't say, "Ah, he's my classmate." No. Any sexual predator needs to be, nipped at the board, stopped in their tracks before they become dangerous, like what we are handling now.
Thank you very much, as said Professor Hannah Itta, former National Coordinator of SOPA Dondo, and thank you also Jerry Bo Esquire, Principal Counsel, Basic Rights Council Initiative. Thank you for joining us on the show. Unfortunately, to our listeners out there, we could not take calls. The program started late due to some certain things that were beyond our control. And of course, kudos to our content providers, Jan Concept, media partners, CrossRiverWatch.com, and the Hit 95.9 FM, the production team led by Charles Kalu, assisted by Jerry Chibong, and not forgetting TJ Tony. We also had Meshag Nyong and Ben Obi here in the studio with us. A special birthday shout out to my auntie, Mrs. Elizabeth Akpong. It's her birthday today. I wish you the very best going forward, of course, and to some of our colleagues, Undomakbet, posthumously. It would have been his birthday today, but may his soul continue to rest in peace. Don't forget that this conversation continues on social media, on Facebook, The Dialogue with Agba Jalingo, Twitter us at The Dialogue CRS, and or rather, X us on The Dialogue CRS, and find us on Instagram, The Dialogue CRS. To our corporate sponsors, Innocent Vehicle Manufacturing, Cusiano Hotel, Sobudu, Stepway Barbie, Saloon, Abba, Calabar. Next week, Crossover Watch is going to be 11, and we'll bring you a special bumper package here in the studio. And of course, you have my managing editor, Jeremiah Chibong, joining us in the studio, and some other people where will we be discussing the media landscape in Crossover State, of course. And you can reach out to us on 08-1345-85365 or 08-1106-1092 and find out how that will go and how you can participate most definitely. And on The Dialogue with Agba Jalingo, we continue to demand for the release of Peter Tex, the godfather, Etem, kidnapped on January 11, 2019, on his way to work. We do not accept what law enforcement officials say. They can't confirm if he's dead or alive. We urge them to, of course, investigate the disappearance of Abubakar Dadi Yata Idris, who went missing since August 2, 2019. What happened to Mubarak Bala is unfortunate, but we wish him the very best at the court of appeal. And we also demand for the unconditional release of Professor Ekanem Ifrim, who has spent more than 1 month in captivity. Don't let the devil steal your joy, because no matter what the devil smoke, can never become the Most High. The Most High is always on the throne. Till next Sunday, when we come your way again, we'll leave no stone unturned and no turn on stone to ensure the Crossover Conversation bears positive fruit. I have been Jonathan Abang. It's bye for now.
Best music.
You got the whole world in your hands. Within the past, you we know you got the whole world in your hands. Commando, dojo, commando, commando.
I get caught and I get life.